We began talking about benzene last week, and I'd like to continue today. I know that we discussed molecular orbital theory last time, and I want to skip some of that today because there's some of the practical side of things as well, which is being able to recognize when is a molecule going to be aromatic, when is a molecule going to be anti-aromatic. So let me just very briefly summarize the two molecules we did discuss last time and then move into a wider discussion of how do we recognize, again, when is something aromatic and something anti-aromatic. Here are the two molecules we had. Benzene, which notice that we have never had the phrase 1,3,5 cyclohexatriene or cyclohexo 1,2,1,3,5 triene. That is another potential name for benzene, but that would be as if you really did have those double bonds there. So I'm just pointing out that even the fact that we don't name it systematically is an indication of its unusual reactivity. That's versus cyclobutadiene, which is not a stable molecule. So, in fact, if you compare one to the other, benzene, there's something unusual going on because all the bonds in the circle, all the carbon-carbon bonds, are equal to each other. Whereas in cyclobutadiene, even though it's the same situation, where it's a cyclic compound where every carbon's sp2 hybridized, unlike benzene, where that kind of structure made for something that's really stable, in the cyclobutadiene case, it turned out to be really unstable due to the fact that you cyclized it. So let me just summarize, because this is what we discussed last time, just in very short form, that benzene is unusually stable. Due to cyclic conjugation. And again, all the CC bonds, carbon-carbon bonds, are equal. That's versus butadiene, which is unusually unstable. Due to cyclic conjugation. And there's a definite distinction between the single and double bonds.
Hold on one second.
So I didn't want to do too much with molecular orbital theory, but I at least want to introduce this thing called a Frost circle. Which is an extension of the results that we get from looking at the benzene and cyclobutadiene cases. Because when we were trying to construct those molecular orbitals, the lowest energy molecular orbital we modeled each time as if we had all the p orbitals the same phase as each other. And if you think about it, there's only one way to have all the p orbitals the same phase. So no matter whether we have 5 carbons or 18 carbons, no matter how many carbons may be there, There's only going to be one lowest energy level ever possible. Now, due to a really strange coincidence, it turns out that if you know how many atoms in the ring are involved, there will always be that many energy levels. And geometrically, it works out this way.
The example I'm going to use to construct a Frost circle is this molecule. COT for short, cyclo octa 1,3,5,7 T tetraene.
This again looks like it should be in a similar reactivity to either benzene or cyclobutadiene, because every carbon is sp2 hybridized. It's cyclic. But do you think this is a planar molecule? Well, because every position is sp2 hybridized, isn't it? And sp2 hybridization, that usually produces something that's planar. And if every single carbon is planar, then shouldn't the whole darn molecule be planar too? Would make sense. But it's not. Because if you try to make the whole molecule planar, it ends up being less stable than if it distorts so that the double bonds don't interact with each other. Now, that sounds exactly like the story for cyclobutadiene, doesn't it? That cyclobutadiene distorts because it's trying to avoid that destabilization.
So cyclooctatetraene has a sort of boat-like structure
where two of the double bonds flip up to avoid the other two double bonds. That's so it avoids this extended conjugation. How can we explain why this is happening? Well, it's going to be based on the molecular orbitals, but we don't want to have to try to write the shade-in diagrams for all of the 8 cyclooctatetraene molecular orbitals, because even if you asked me to, I don't know if I could do it. But we don't need to, because here's the really freaky coincidence that happens.
And this would be the Frost circle.
You start with a circle, put a origin at it, and that origin represents zero energy. Which, if we end up with an orbital on that line, that means it's going to be non-bonding. Anything above is anti-bonding, anything below is bonding.
As I had said before, there's always only exactly one lowest energy level in any of these cyclic systems. So I'm automatically going to put an energy level there.
Then, I'm sorry, what was I saying just a moment ago? Frost circle?
Only one lowest energy.
One lowest energy. Okay, and then the strange coincidence that occurs is if you inscribe an octagon. Why an octagon? Because there's 8 carbons in the circle.
It turns out that the relative energy levels that we get exactly match the energy levels that we get in real life.
So if we knew what the quantitatively, the energy of going from zero down to that lowest energy level, and then were to measure the energies in real life for the other orbitals, it matches this. And it's just this crazy coincidence that occurs from cyclic conjugation. Explaining why and how, that you'll just have to take a more advanced chemistry class, either physical chemistry or physical organic. We're just going to use the results that we get.
And I'll draw this one out to the side so we can see it better.
So we get 8 energy levels. Notice 3 of them are bonding, 3 of them are anti-bonding, and then there's 2 non-bonding levels. We know that because an octagon is going to evenly cut the circle into quarters. So if you weren't sure where to draw things for an 8-sided figure, hopefully you would see that this makes sense the way I've drawn it. How many electrons total are going to go into here? Well, there are 4 double bonds on paper, That means 8 electrons.
Where are the 8 electrons going to go? Well, they're going to follow the normal filling rules.
Which means 2 electrons are going to end up in non-bonding orbitals. Again, the same situation as the cyclobutadiene. If we allowed all the double bonds to be separate from each other, like what the structure really does, well, then all those pi electrons would be bonding in bonding orbitals instead. So when we try to flatten the structure, we destabilize it because we're pushing electrons into non-bonding orbitals. So it avoids being planar so that all of the electrons can be in bonding orbitals. So it's just another example of when something bad can happen. And the point of this example is to show that we can use a Frost circle to correctly predict those relative energy levels, to correctly predict which ones are bonding, which ones are not just which ones, how many are bonding, non-bonding, and antibonding.
So if cyclooctatetraene was forced to be planar, 2 pi electrons that otherwise would be in bonding molecular orbitals are instead pushed into higher energy non-bonding orbitals, which is not favorable.
As such, the structure of cyclooctatetraene is distorted so that the 4 double bonds avoid each other. I'm going to do one last example in which I'm going to use the Frost circle again so that I can again justify the results that occur.
This is cyclopentadiene, cyclopenta-1,3-diene. And I don't remember the pKa value without looking it up, but it's far, far smaller than what a standard hydrocarbon should be. And it turns out, in fact, it is the hydrogen right at this position. Let me see if I could find this really quickly.
It takes more than 20 seconds, I'll give up.
Okay. Thank you. 25,
even if that is the pKa value, is certainly a lot lower than 50 or 60, which is typically what you have for an alkane. So that means that for just a plain hydrocarbon, no oxygen or anything else in it, this is an extremely acidic compound. Can anybody come up with a rationalization of why this would be acidic?
It's about 16.
Because it's what?
No, it says it's about 16 pKa.
16, even lower than I thought it was. That means it's as acidic as an alcohol that's got an electronegative group on it to make it electron withdrawing and make it more acidic. But why? What would it look like if it dissociated? Take an H plus off. We make this anion.
What is the hybridization of that lone pair, the carbon at that lone pair? It looks like it's sp3, doesn't it?
Is it? Because now it looks to me like it's sp2.
So which one is it? Beyond that, what about this other carbon that used to be sp2 but now looks
sp3?
Which one is which? Well, it turns out I could write three other resonance structures. You could push that lone pair three other places and end up so that each carbon has the lone pair at some point. If every carbon has the lone pair, then every carbon can't be sp3. Because the only way that this could occur is if this is delocalized, which means every position is sp2.
The cyclopentadienyl anion, which is what this is, cyclopentadienyl anion. That is the proper name for the anion. Is completely delocalized. Although its written structure appears to contain a carbon that is sp3 hybridized. This is only because it is a resonant structure that fails to properly show the true structure of the molecule. What if we were to write one of these Frost circles for it? What's the rules for constructing a Frost circle again? One vertex of a polygon is automatically located at the bottom of the circle. Two,
the number of sides in the polygon is equal to the number of atoms in the ring. I'll just warn you right now, I have a question every year that asks something along the lines of, draw a Frost circle. And every year I draw a molecule that has more carbons in it than the carbons in the ring.
For example, just off to the side here, imagine this. If I put an ethyl group on benzene, is that ethyl group going to have any effect on benzene itself?
Are there any p orbitals on the ethyl group that could affect the conjugation going on in the benzene ring? So no. When I make a Frost circle of that compound then, I'm not going to have 8 points in the circle because in the circle itself there's only 6 atoms. So this is an important point that the polygon that we inscribe only has as many points as the number of atoms in the ring itself.
Yes.
If the farthest part of it was an alkene, it wouldn't be conjugated at all. It would still have no effect. If you made the whole ethyl group an alkene to make the molecule styrene, the extra double bond, it turns out, does not interfere with the benzene portion of it. Now, that ends up being a very reactive molecule because you have aromaticity and conjugation between that ring and the double bond. But unless you make another loop, it doesn't have an effect.
So, the number of vertices in the polygon equals the number of atoms in the ring. Notice I said atoms instead of carbon, because I'm going to have some interesting example molecules coming up in a minute, one of which doesn't even have any carbon in it, but still has this same sort of stabilization. So, the polygon is inscribed in a circle. The vertices that are at the same level as the origin represent non-bonding orbitals below represents bonding above antibonding. If I had five carbons in that cyclopentadienyl system, well, I'm going to have a pentagon that I'm going to inscribe now. I put one point down at the lowest position, because that represents that one lowest energy molecular orbital. And because I've had some experience doing this kind of problem, I just happen to know that three of the points of this pentagon are going to end up below the middle line, and two of them are going to end up above. So we have kind of an unequal distribution of molecular orbitals, and that happens this time because we have an odd number of points in that circle. But again, we could at least use this to describe what happens. Which, how many electrons am I going to put in here if this represents the cyclopentadienyl system? How many total pi electrons? How many total pi electrons are in this system? Six, aren't there? Because you have two double bonds, and then you've got the lone pair. So 4 plus 2. And that lone pair, remember, it's not in an sp3 hybridized orbital, because it's in this completely delocalized system. So this has 6 pi electrons. Notice that those 6 pi electrons are going to exactly fill the bonding orbitals. One moment. What are some generalizations? That if you had the smallest system possible, that you'd have one bonding orbital. That if we had, for example, a three-atom system, that you had conjugation. You'll end up with one and only one bonding orbital. But that means there's always at least one bonding orbital. No matter how many atoms are in the system otherwise, no matter how large or small the ring is, when we start adding any other orbitals to it, there's always going to be, if there are more bonding orbitals, an even number of orbitals around. Because if you look at some of these Frost circles or look at the diagrams we constructed the other day, then all those cases had one lowest orbital and then pairs of bonding orbitals. You put these two things together, and this is the explanation for what is known as the 4n plus 2 rule. That if you count up the number of pi electrons, that's the magic number that you've got to have if you're going to have this stabilization occur. If you look at all the systems where we have destabilization, for example, cyclobutadiene, there were a total of 4 pi electrons. Well, 4 doesn't fit this formula, 4n plus 2. If we look at the cyclooctatetraene, that would be 8 pi electrons. 8 doesn't fit this equation of 4n plus 2. If instead of that cation, the triangular cation, what if I made an anion instead? Well, that would have made 4 pi electrons, and from this diagram, you would see that some of those electrons would automatically go into antibonding orbitals. So again, it's more symmetry, more coincidence. But this is the rule that's developed. Aromatic systems will only have bonding electrons. Which means the total number of pi electrons equals 4n plus 2, where n is greater than or equal to 0. That's not entirely correct. The better way to say it is that all bonding orbitals are filled. But most textbooks don't quite get down to this depth. Some textbooks actually introduce Frost circles, and if I remember, your text kind of briefly mentions it. But this is the origin of this 4n plus 2 rule, which is part of what are known as the Hückel rules. Rules for predicting when a compound will be aromatic or anti-aromatic. A compound will be aromatic when it is cyclic. The stabilization, the unusual stabilization, only occurs when you pull everything into a circle. Just think of it this way. If you had a linear system, just a line of p orbitals, well, the two end orbitals don't interact with each other. As soon as you pull that around, they, on top of all the other orbitals, interact. And as we saw in the diagrams on Friday, that changes the types of molecular orbitals that are available. But all of this only happens if there's full conjugation around the circle. Now, I showed you an example up above where I put an ethyl group on benzene. The ethyl group doesn't have any effect, doesn't prevent conjugation.
So we ignore it. Yes.
Oh, just doing your hair. Okay.
So it's cyclic. It's fully conjugated. For something to be fully conjugated, which means those p orbitals really do overlap with each other, it's got to be planar.
And then, the last restriction is
you can only have 4n plus 2 electrons. So, shall we look at some examples of aromatic versus anti-aromatic versus non-aromatic systems? Non-aromatic would mean neither stabilized nor destabilized.
So,
start out with a slightly unfair one first.
This is the molecule naphthalene, which you should hopefully be familiar with from 12A.
It was one of the solids that you isolated in your very first experiment. Aromatic or non-aromatic or anti-aromatic? Aromatic? Why? You're correct. Is it cyclic? Ignore the double bond that's, you could say, bisecting the compound. Just focus on the fact that you've got a p orbital here and a p orbital here, and there's a larger ring system involved. So is it cyclic? Yes. Is it fully conjugated? Yeah. Every position is sp2 hybridized. Is it planar? Turns out in this case, yes, it is. Because those six-membered rings, they're both locked in, and because it's all full of double bonds, it is planar. Does it have the right number of pi electrons? Well, how many total pi electrons are there? 10, because there's 5 double bonds. The reason I said ignore the double bond in the middle of that ring, because realize I could write another resonance structure that doesn't have the double bond in the middle, but instead has it going completely just around the system.
In fact, let me write that one to make it maybe a little clearer why it is aromatic.
So from that resonance structure, it looks like the double bonds are only going around the outside.
So yes, it is cyclic. It is fully conjugated. It's planar. And it's got 10 electrons, which works if n equals 2.
Shall we do another example? Yes.
I don't understand where n is.
N is any number it has to be as long as it fits that equation, and as long as it's a whole number. So as long as you can match it to a value of n, then it's okay.
How about pyridine? Is it aromatic? Is it cyclic?
What's the conjugation on each, hybridization on each atom in the ring?
sp2.
So they all should be fully conjugated. Is it planar, therefore? Well, yeah, in a six-membered ring, its only choice it has is to be planar, if they're all sp2 hybridized. How many pi electrons are there? What about the lone pair of nitrogen? Is it part of the pi system? No, it's not.
And we could write a portion of a smog diagram to justify this. If I have the nitrogen and two carbons on either side of it. Let me expand that out a little bit. Give myself more room to draw. So R stands for R, our variable name, but in this case it also means the rest of the ring. Because at the moment I'm only concerned what's going on around nitrogen. Well, nitrogen is sp2 hybridized, which means it does have a p orbital available to undergo conjugation. But if that's true, that means that the lone pair is not in the p orbital. It's an sp2 orbital. Which is perpendicular to the pi system. So it is aromatic. Since there are only 6 pi electrons in a planar cyclic conjugated system.
So we see another example.
This is the compound pyrrole.
Is it aromatic? Well, is it cyclic? Is it planar? Is it fully conjugated? Because what is the hybridization on the nitrogen? No, it's not. It is sp2. Why would it be sp2?
Well, there's two stories to tell behind this. One is the fact that nitrogen auto-inverts. If you look at the structure of nitrogen, it's 3 hydrogens pointed one way, a lone pair pointed the other. Except at a few billion times a second, the lone pair and the hydrogen switch places. That's called the auto-inversion of nitrogen. That process used to be used as the basis of atomic clocks because it was predictable, the frequency. But if that's inverting all the time, that means that there's, in theory, one moment where the whole system is planar. And remember, the hybridization matches geometry, not the other way around. So if you can pause for a moment and have that nitrogen planar, you have a p orbital. If you have a p orbital, it all of a sudden overlaps with the other p orbitals that are around it. There's a lone pair there, which I'm about to draw a smog diagram to prove that lone pair, unlike pyridine, is part of the pi system. If it's part of the pi system, then with the 2 other pi bonds we've got, we have a total of 6 electrons total in a cyclic, planar, fully conjugated system, which is why pyrrole and the other heterocycles like it. I'm going to draw these down in a moment. Thiophene, which is where you put sulfur instead. Furan, that you've already seen, where you put oxygen instead. Those are both, all those are aromatic systems. So although Although nitrogen appears to have sp3 hybridization. It is energetically far more favorable for it to be sp2 hybridized. Since it would then become part of an aromatic system.
So it's kind of a trick question, but if someone asks you, what's the hybridization of nitrogen pyrrole? It's sp2, no matter what it looks like on paper, because remember, what things look like on paper don't necessarily match their true molecular structure. Yes? Yes, because geometry determines hybridization to some extent. When we start getting into this type of topic, we do end up with areas where there's deviations. For example, that cyclooctatetraene, you don't have planarity there because it would be unfavorable for it to. So that's a distortion. That's a deviation from the ideal. In this case, it's still geometry, but it's also the stabilization. Because whether or not that nitrogen is planar, the bonds with carbon could still be coplanar. The hydrogen would be pointed off at one angle, the lone pair would be pointed at another. But bring the lone pair up where it's parallel to the other p orbitals, it gets trapped in that system. And because it's more favorable, it happens. Things roll downhill. So since it's favorable because it's aromatic, that's why the structure is going to adopt the configuration that it has. And again, we should draw a portion of a small diagram here to show that. And so again, not going to draw the whole thing. If you're really catching on here, you're realizing I'm drawing for you the portion of the diagram that when, not if, you get this question on the exam, that you'll have to draw as well. Would you like me to say that again for those of you who didn't catch that? You're good? What if I had took pity on the ones that like, wait, did he just say exam? Yeah, you're gonna have a question on the exam where I'll have 5 or 6 molecules and I'll ask, is it aromatic or not? And you gotta explain why it is or why it isn't. And the only way to explain for pyrrole and pyridine whether they are or not aromatic is if you can concretely say where the lone pairs are in these systems, which you can only do if you can draw a Smog diagram. So notice it is the hydrogen itself, which pyridine didn't have a hydrogen. It just had a lone pair. But here there's an actual hydrogen that it is the thing going to end up perpendicular to the plane of the ring. And the lone pair just becomes part of that pi system. Questions about that example? We've only got a few more minutes left, so let me just show you another couple of common examples.
I forget the name of this one, but it's, I think, a neat thought problem.
Is it aromatic? Is it cyclic? What's the hybridization of each boron? sp2, automatically. That means there are p orbitals there. Because of that, what's the hybridization of each nitrogen?
It is also sp2 for the same reason it is in pyrrole. Because when it's sp2 hybridized, every nitrogen and boron is conjugated with each other. The lone pairs on the nitrogen, that adds up to 6 pi electrons. That means it's aromatic. Cyclic, planar, conjugated, has the right number of electrons. Yes?
So when we see this on paper, can we just kind of pretend that the lone pairs aren't there because they went into the pi system and just call it sp2?
Yeah. Yes. This would be why we don't give you these kinds of molecules in Chem 1 to determine hybridization of, because it'd be really not unfair. You know, if all you did that quarter was talk about molecular orbital theory, then sure. But we've learned a little bit more than that in Chem 1. One last molecule. And then we'll continue with this topic Thursday. This is cyclic, isn't it? It's got 10 pi electrons. What are the other restrictions? It's fully conjugated, which it looks like it might be, and it is planar, which it's not. And to see why, let me redraw it a little larger so that I can draw the two hydrogens in that must be pointed at each other in the structure. In fact, they must be pointed directly at each other, in line with each other. The two hydrogens can't exist in the same place, so the molecule has to twist. One hydrogen going lower, one hydrogen going higher. But that means it's not planar, which means it's not conjugated, which means it's not aromatic. And again, the explanation due to steric hindrance. The fact that the two hydrogens are pointing at each other the molecule is distorted and non-planar, so it is not fully conjugated. Any last questions for today? I don't know what you would call the structure you end up with. For the level of detail for this class, you just need to know that this is one of the odd exceptions due to the fact you can't have something planar.
They wouldn't point elsewhere else with the other mechanism.
It's because of geometry. If you look at the double bond and the single bond, if they're already pointing one way, and that's sp2 hybridized, the hydrogen has to point the way it is. There's no option to. Now, it's not that I'm going to try to think of some other molecule that you've never seen before that you'd have to guess at something like this. I mean, this is a classical trick question. But that's why I'm showing it to you, so if you saw this particular molecule, you'd know you to watch out for that kind of exception. All right, so we'll continue on Thursday.